Hello and welcome. I'm Dennis Prout, Certified Financial Planner.
And I'm Shea Pataja, the co-host of
New Retirement Radio,
the podcast.
Dennis Prout is an investment advisor representative with Capital Asset Advisory Services, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Opinions expressed on this program do not necessarily reflect those of Capital Asset Advisory Services. The topics discussed and opinions given are not intended to address the specific needs of any listener. Listeners are encouraged to discuss their financial needs with a financial professional.
Live, Unleashed, Mr. Dennis Prout, Certified Financial Planner, is here from Prout Financial Design with his posse today. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Ron. Great to be here. On a Thursday morning?
Yes.
10-4-18.
Good buddy.
10-4. Thank you for listening. We certainly appreciate it. We have in the studio with us, of course, Shea Pataja.
Hello.
Learning how to do the sport of curling the other day.
Oh,
yeah. With
oh
her
my goodness.
Dad.
That was so much fun.
What fun?
It was a riot.
Yes.
All the hype is true, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
Awesome.
So.
Ton of fun.
Don Pache's been harassing you to go. Go.
It's all in the wrist.
Crazy. And joining us is Casey Petz, who is a coach to entrepreneurs and a coach also to us on an active, ongoing basis, who has personal experience with transition. Today, the show is about transitions. And we want to talk about, as I was going through the
information. My car needs a new transition. No,
does it? Yeah, that too. You know, everyone has a different transition story.
But that's an expensive one.
That is.
What we're talking about is the transition of business between family members, between others who might have an interest, from one set of persons or an individual to others who may have an interest in that business, and how to get that done. Today we want to talk about some of the more emotional traumas, emotional issues, emotional stops that keep people from making appropriate transitions, and perhaps even getting to the table to get through what's most important about these transitions to help those who might follow. Not only financially, emotionally, as well as with the new company. So there is, when we were talking about the show beforehand today, and I was looking through the notes earlier this morning, I thought this is easily a two-hour program mm-hmm. because there's so much. So today we want to stick more with the emotional side, the issues related to whether or not you're a minor owner in a company, or whether you're a major owner, whether this is a farm, whether this is an ongoing production business, whatever that business or industry is, making this transition and how to best get this done, to approach it perhaps with maybe even some of your own issues that are stopping this. So we want to consult that first. So Casey Petz is a coach for entrepreneurs. When his father passed away unexpectedly, Casey was left with a family business to unravel, and it started at his father's hospital bedside.
Yeah, that's correct. Not the best place to work out a transition plan, to be honest. Yeah, very, very difficult.
In a lot of different ways, of course.
Yeah.
Intense?
Yeah, I mean, you're dealing with the emotional side of potentially losing a family member, and obviously the trauma that surrounds any situation like that. But you gotta deal with the reality of it, which is he's running a business, and we have clients, customers, employees, people that have relied upon the business for a long period of time, and those people aren't going anywhere. I mean, a business outlives the ownership.
What? I don't think entrepreneurs want to hear that.
Sorry, Shay.
It goes on without me.
It does.
Maybe that's the first place to begin.
I think it is. As you were talking there in the intro, Dennis, I was thinking about some of the things that I see with a lot of my clients. And, you know, really it's patterns of behavior and patterns of things that happen over time that help me to guide them as best I can and get them into a position where they might be able to think a little bit more strategically. One of the things that I see pretty frequently is that an entrepreneur or a small business owner of, you know, it's a universal property, is they invest their lives in building something from nothing. And when you do that over the course of time, your business becomes a reflection of self. It becomes...
It's as, who you are.
It is.
And or the other partners with you.
Correct.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, so it's not just you and your spouse or you and your family that may or may not be employed by the business, but it's your employees and your extended family and your clients that all see decades worth of work that are a reflection of your personality, of what you value, of what you've worked so hard for. And, you know, you talked about the word emotion. I mean, there's nothing more emotional than your life's work. There's nothing more emotion-driven than your legacy and what you leave behind. I mean, this is raising a child. This is the blood, sweat, and tears that people don't see that you're so heavily invested in. It becomes really scary to develop a plan and strategy of what that might look like when you decide that you're not going to be in charge of that anymore. How about that, Dennis?
Oh,
you're just
going to
hand... Here's my life's work. You handle it from here.
It's incredibly personal. I mean, as you were talking, honestly, I was thinking when I started in business back in 1984 at zero. And I usually am listening to other people's story, but indeed, it is incredibly personal. Sat with a business owner last week, and he said that, almost that same exact thing. He said, we started at zero. We came up here, we had nothing. And now, you know, a huge operation.
Yeah.
Yes.
I have some Shea stats here. 58% of business owners, this is a survey that went out by Wilmington Trust Corporation. 58% of business owners have not created a specific plan, despite the fact that long-term transition planning usually results in higher business values, lower taxes, and more peace of mind for all stakeholders. 78% of business owners who do not have a plan say that the main reason they don't is that they enjoy running their company. And a more shocking stat, I think, is that 47% of the business owners interviewed were over the age of 65 and did not have a transition plan.
Did not. And of those that had a transition plan, they have a specific plan and have begun executing it. Or number two, have a specific plan but have not begun executing it. So it actually sounds okay in terms of generally, but when you delve into it a little bit, not that many have really actually gone after it.
See, I interviewed on our entrepreneur show here an advisor once, and that's great advice. He said if you're starting a new business, everything should be based on your exit strategy. So every decision you make should be based on an exit strategy, suggesting transition or exit strategy should be there with you all along.
That's great advice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And like you said, some people have a transition strategy, but they're just not exercising it.
Yeah, I think the right way or the way that we've phrased that in the past is begin with the end in mind.
Yeah.
If you can begin thinking about what this business is going to look like when you have ended your relationship with it or the current leadership team has moved on from what they've typically been responsible for, then you can develop a strategy and a plan back from that. As opposed to what the stats say most people are doing is developing along the way, creating as they go.
Is there, do many people plan for the event of unexpected transition, you know, death of the owner?
You know, it's such a hard thing. You know, back to the emotional side of things is, you know, when you build a business around your time and talents and abilities, you don't want to admit that you're fallible or, you know, not invincible or that someday you might be not healthy enough to perform. Because truthfully, death is kind of an extreme example, but incapacitation or other health issues that that come up are a much more common issue that I see in the clients that I work with, where somebody who is performing at one level all of a sudden isn't, and now what? They're still here. And that sometimes becomes the bigger issue of the two to plan for. They kind of have different paths that I've seen that are important to consider in order to get through it properly. But I guess to answer your question exactly, it's a hard thing to admit that you need to think about your own passing.
Yeah.
Yeah. The mortality.
Passing either mortality-wise and or even from a disability where you just can't do it. I mean, you don't have the energy or the mental capacity, whatever it is. For some reason, something like that has gotten in the way.
There's so much vulnerability in admitting that you might need help or that a position or a company has outgrown your ability, that what you've built is bigger than you, and what you've built may be better in someone else's hands. And an entrepreneur with an ego, imagine that, Shay, an entrepreneur with an ego.
I know nothing about entrepreneurs. I don't know what you're talking about.
Okay, yeah.
We have a few here in Traverse City.
They're just not hardwired to admit that they might need some help, that they might not have the strategy forward, that they might need some assistance in order to develop the proper strategy and plan and get that clarity that they need to make that next transition and deal with the emotional side of it.
I think...
How would you counsel someone to bring those others along that might assist in that? What do they do? How do they get through that?
Probably the biggest thing that I would recommend is they need to take a step back, almost like you would in assessing a medical situation where you know something's wrong, you know something's there, but you're not capable of seeing what it is yourself. And
most patients know it before the doctor because they go, you know, I don't feel right. And this is, you know, and speaking of the physical, our own physical health.
Yeah. Yep. Okay. Yep. I mean, you know, something's there. You know that, you know, your knee doesn't feel right or you're experiencing some back pain, but you don't know what to do about it. So rather than approach it as a simple solution or, you know, some sort of thing where you can just walk a different way or rest more or eat better, go and seek professional assistance first to diagnose exactly what the issue is and develop a series of plans and strategies with as much input as you can from people who are not invested in that emotional side. They're just prescribing different strategies or different ideas that are going to be able to help them. Take a look at the options. Do your research. Mm-hmm. Speak to people who don't have stake in the game to get some, you know, some direction, some clarity on it.
It almost sounds to me like a battle plan, and that you're thinking in some respects almost like a Napoleon, perhaps, and that he would see the whole battle on the battlefield before it happened, and he would picture every possible outcome within his own mind so that he was ready in case those outcomes occurred. So that's obviously why he was so incredible, but he forced himself, I think, through that discipline of trying his best to think through all the outcomes. But two, he was seeking outside counsel on that too, talking with others about that.
Right. I think that's a great analogy in that, the field general and the guy, I guess, manipulating all the moving parts is from an elevated position. They're in a spot to be able to see all the aspects of the battle so that they have that clarity necessary to guide the soldiers or to guide the plan and process from afar. You're not swinging the swords. You're not on the ground doing the necessary work with the employees or the organization. You're elevating yourself above that so that you can see the different aspects and all the complexity of it as a whole. And again, you have to be able to remain neutral in the outcome to develop a well thought out plan and strategy to get through the difficult emotional side of it.
And man, do they need to hear from you as the owner as well, given the tribal knowledge, the stuff that you know that nobody else does, that just rattles around in there, and you push that back perhaps, and you say, now, this particular relationship that we have eventually has to be cut But the people following you may not know that at all.
Right.
And you sense that intuitively as an owner, perhaps, as an example, where that needs to be brought up as a part of this transition. Okay, these three companies we're working with are great. This one over here, this fourth one, as a part of this transition process, you're going to want to broom that company or that particular relationship as a possibility.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah.
Tribal knowledge.
Yeah, so we had you on the air last January, which is crazy. It does seem like forever ago, while we were at our TD Ameritrade conference, and you told a story in great detail about your father passing, and he kind of had this sixth sense about it and had invited you and your brother into his office, which was in his home, handed over what he thought was probably enough for you to carry on the family business, and then went into the hospital and never came out. And it was, I think you said 5 days.
Yes,
right?
5 days.
5 days.
Yep.
And one thing that we've mentioned in this interview is that there's a lot of entanglements. There's a lot of connections that entrepreneurs have that they typically either forget to share or don't share with the family or the other business owners. So while your dad was in the hospital, which entanglements, if any, showed up?
You know, the thing that was most surprising to me in the wake of that situation, because, you know, it wasn't like people didn't recognize the complexity and severity of the situation. He wasn't in the hospital for something minor. So it was a little shocking at first to see so many of the business relationships that I didn't have a full clear view on show up so quickly. People wanting to speak with him right away, people wanting to understand, you know, how a contract may or may not change. It was, you know, kind of almost the secret side of entrepreneurship, the untold story of all of the, you know, the potential ideas and the business relationships and the side of it that we don't necessarily get too much into when mm-hmm. we see a successful business from the outside. Those sorts of folks were right on the scene right away, asking questions of how things might change. And that was not something that, you know, I was mentally, emotionally prepared for, to start answering some of those questions and to start unraveling those entanglements. So we had, my dad had two other partners at the time and several employees that, you know, obviously were very concerned, but also had some silent partnerships and agreements that were made that were not codified in language. So you have a lot of people kind of coming out of the woodwork and wondering what the impact might be on them now that the handshake agreement or the thing that had been that a certain way for over a decade might all of a sudden change without their input.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. So my next question is, why do entrepreneurs keep so many secrets?
I think it's because we have a lot of ideas. Some are good, but a lot of them are really bad. And we're really good. You know, entrepreneurs are masters at failing fast and failing without damage, bouncing as high as they can when something doesn't go right. I mean, that's why it looks so good on the outside, is because people see that, they see that one good idea. They see that business that looks to be, you know, from all intents and purpose to be thriving. They see happy employees. They see something new that pops up out of nowhere, and they don't, an entrepreneur's job is to make sure that that's the story of their business. Mm-hmm. You don't talk about the, you know, countless hours spent trying to work your way around a problem, or the one or two ideas that you chase down that were absolute failures and cost a lot of money. I mean, you have to protect that side of it, because that's not what people are going to believe in. That's not how you build your business.
That's not how you build a vision.
Correct.
Got it.
You build it around the one or two things that went really well and hope that nobody notices the 15 to 20 things that flopped.
Right. And I think it would give the listeners some perspective if you told us a little bit about the success of your father, because you did tell your story at Fulfillment, and people can hear it there at fulfillmentstories.com. But what it gives a little bit more gravitas to the story when you understand how successful your dad was and how impactful he was as a person and in people's personal lives, not just in business.
My father started out very young in the family business and worked his way up literally from moving boxes and working in the production lines up through running the company shortly before he left, and got to see every step of the, you know, kind of the entrepreneurial stages of life for a business, of developing from a great idea to rebooting into different business channels, and basically learned the business by doing, learned the business by making his set of mistakes. But over the course of a 35-year career in building this business, his main thing really was relationship, Shay. It was all about doing the right thing, knowing that the payoff comes in the end. And when it was time to exit the family business, he was a second, he was in the third generation of a family business that lasted through the family through fourth generation, or there were members of the fourth generation working on the leadership team when it was sold. That his whole thing when he exited that business and started his new business was built around the relationships that he worked so hard for. And I think that's the real story, is finding your true talent and leveraging that for something meaningful beyond just making money, beyond providing a living for your family, but doing it in a way that commits to community and brings forth a lot of positivity for everyone that it can possibly touch.
Did your father do succession planning prior to his passing?
No. Not 1 minute of it, really.
He couldn't imagine not working, not doing what he was doing.
Right. You know, and I think that's a common thing with entrepreneurs, that they see their work as their life. It is what gives them energy in the morning. It shows them the path through the day. And without that, you start to wonder, you know, what does retirement look like? Do I really want retirement? What does not doing this business and committing myself fully to the clients, to the employees, to the business that I've worked so hard to create? The business itself is the lifeblood by which entrepreneurs live by.
Mm-hmm.
So planning to not be part of it, planning to not experience that day in, day out, is a scary place to go.
Well, every entrepreneur I know says, my plan is just to die. I don't want to ever quit this. I love it. And even in my retirement years, I'm going to rewire it into something else. So they enjoy working. That's their play.
So there is some value in that mentality up until the point where they do die. Because the business, as I stated before, outlives the entrepreneur. So seeing a business as your lifeblood and the thing that gives you energy, and then committing yourself to doing it until you pass, is, you know, it's a wonderful mantra, except for your employees, except for your customers and clients, except for your family who has a business to untangle when you're not there.
Mm-hmm.
So that while that is a wonderful commitment to make, it leaves a lot of loose ends that seriously jeopardize the future of your business and in ultimately your legacy and what you leave behind by not planning properly. It kind of dovetails into something that we've talked about already today, is what, just because you founded a company, just because you ran a company, just because you served in a particular role or held a position for a long period of time, that doesn't mean that you have to remain in that position until you die.
Can you tell the story of the man who ran the company and then took a different position within it?
Sure. Yeah, it's kind of a funny story. Is a second generation family member running a family business. He had served previously as the president of the company and grew it significantly. Everyone looked at this man as a tremendous leader, and ultimately directly responsible for the success that everyone shared in, not just the family members, but the over 100 employees of the company at that time. And it came time for this gentleman to make his transition into retirement. But he, just like, you know, a lot of the people that we've talked about here today, is they're not willing to surrender their business and all of their hard work to the unknown without having some finger on the pulse of the business. So after some brainstorming and coming up with what might be an appropriate position or role going forward, he decided he wanted to be the company truck driver. And he would show up on Friday. The box truck would be loaded up, and he would faithfully, up until his late 70s, faithfully deliver the orders to the stores, dropping off pallets full of product, not obviously doing all the heavy lifting. We had employees that were at the locations to help him out with that, but it gave him something meaningful to do every single week. He got to see all the employees. He got to remain engaged. You know, he let's not lie about it. I mean, he kind of liked the gossip side and like hearing all the stories. So
the human interest stories is what I call it, Casey.
Yeah, the soap opera. You know, he wasn't willing to let that go. So, you know, here he is, you know, well past his prime, unable to run the company, but he's a company truck driver. And, you know, so what if he dented it a few times and gotten a, you know, couple of
little fender benders,
if you will. That's, yeah. You know, it's just part of the deal.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it just a quick example of what it can turn into if you plan properly and you're willing to accept that you may not have the role that you once had, but by planning properly and getting some good thoughts and clarity behind it, you can still have meaningful things to do for your business.
What was the biggest lesson you learned as a part of your own issues and transition that you saw that might be helpful to our audience?
I think the biggest thing really was to stop worrying about the things that didn't go the way that we had thought they would. Inevitably, the best laid plans are often laid to waste because other things pop up, other entanglements complicate the matter. I mean, there's always a chance that what you thought you would do, what you had planned on, what you had hoped for, or in the case of a lot of family businesses and entrepreneurs, what the vested interest or family member parties to the business want to happen does not happen. And to fear that or to run from that creates even more entanglements and more complexity that are even more difficult. So don't worry about that stuff. It's going to happen. The lesson I learned was to focus on solutions and to focus on getting clarity on the things that we could so that we didn't continue to spend our time spinning wheels.
In essence, leadership, as you're talking, I was thinking of the great story of George Washington in the middle of the battle, turning around right into where the bullets were all flying from and telling all of his troops to fight on. So in essence, it wasn't going the way they wanted it to, but it took leadership as well.
Yeah,
to make
it
happen.
You can't lament the stuff that doesn't go the way that you want it to.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
But not planning creates a lot more of a mess.
I think the plan and the strategy keeps you headed in the right direction. No matter what happens, no matter what sort of pitfall you run into or what entanglement pops up, thinking that stuff through and having clarity when stuff doesn't go your way keeps you in a great place to move forward and to ultimately maintain what it is that you've decided is really important for the company, whether it's that transition or who it transitions to or how the business is sold or operated in your absence.
So the key steps in transition planning, we'll discuss just a few of them here. Number one, review your current plans. What are their elements, wills, trust, buy-sell agreements? And you had something very strong to add to that in terms of your own input. What would you say about that in terms of the attitude of the entrepreneur or owners of the business itself?
I think the first thing that entrepreneurs or the ownership team needs to admit is that what they have to date probably isn't very good or thought through enough. It's almost like the first step to solving a problem is admitting that you might have one. And that awareness of your documentation that you have to date or your business relationships and contracts that you have in place, reviewing those and sort of learning about what you've set up in your operating agreement or other contracts is that first sort of awareness phase, like, hey, this might not work.
Yeah. So it's out of date. These companies are no longer whatever it might be. A lot of different components may not make sense given that particular agreement or agreements.
You might have new family members. I mean, okay. It's kind of funny, but I mean, this...
That sounds personal.
Yeah, I mean, you might have new family members that didn't exist when that previous documentation was written. I mean, sometimes these documents go back 10, 15, as many as 30 years, and a personal experience, yes.
Hmm.
The agreement for my father's, some of my father's entanglements were older than my youngest sibling.
Wow.
So now we have a problem.
Very dated.
Very dated.
Number two, build your team. Someone to coordinate all those aspects of that solution. What would you say about that in terms of what that team ought to be made up of or the components?
The first thing is seeking out professional counsel and services that are used to doing this thing for a living. So when you have...
Who can see through the smoke?
See through the smoke. And, you know, this is... If you're doing something every day, you're going to have a lot more background knowledge in terms of the laws or the way that things tend to weave their way through a process, whether it's a CPA or a tax lawyer or somebody who does trust documents and paperwork. It all flows so much smoother when you have people who are experts in their field and used to dealing with the sorts of complexity and questions that pop up. And also, again, to admit something up front is that your team probably shouldn't be comprised of the 10 vested owner and or family members who all want something. That's not a meeting that's going to produce any fruit. You have to sit down and think to yourself, okay, we need advice. We need professionals. We need to have some options laid out. There's not going to be one, you know, typically one thing that you can do. It's all part of a kind of protracted process to get the right people to the table to build out a plan and a strategy that's going to work for you.
Obviously, as an owner, you're going to be able to assess the strengths and weaknesses of each professional. The tax accountant may be great with tax, but he or she may not understand the true value of your business. Just because they're focused on the tax, they may have an idea of the value of your business, but getting an appropriate valuation may come from another specialty firm outside of your current relationships, possibly. So getting that advice, as you mentioned, may come from a variety of sources.
Right.
And making certain within your own means and interpretation what makes sense. Because any business owner may be valuing their business too conservatively or too aggressively. They may not have the right view on that. So sometimes, obviously, then the advisor can come in and say, you know, you're not being realistic here. Yes. Number three, determine and document your goals. What would you add to that?
I'd say that is best summed up in doing the work. So it's, you had some stats, Dennis, that, you know, basically, you know, you have two sets. You have the group that didn't want to put the planning in and get things down on paper. So they've just sort of ignored the problem because they're either having so much fun running their business or they're too busy to address the issue, or the ones that have done the work and do have a plan in place, but they're ignoring it. They have all of the advice. They've gotten everyone to the table. They put the documentation and work down on paper, but they're not actually following it up and executing on what they have committed themselves to do. So I would say really, you know, that third piece is execute the plan, deliver on what you've decided you need to do. And that, when, you know, I guess if you go back to the statistics and what it says, if you have one group that's not willing to do the plan and then the other group that is, but they're not doing it, then you're still at zero.
Mm-hmm. What would you say would be the biggest gift an entrepreneur or owner or owners of a company could give to those who would follow? Gift or gifts?
Clarity. If you could hand off to the next generation or to the new owners or, you know, whatever that transition looks like on the other side of it, if your employees and your customers understand clearly where we are and where we're heading, you have something that not only will outlive you, but will thrive in your absence. And being able to hand that over, because this is the untold story of entrepreneurship. If you don't plan, if you don't have strategy, you are letting down. It's not necessarily the big issue to me isn't necessarily your family. It's all those customers, all those employees in their family whose livelihoods are at risk because you didn't give them a clear plan going forward. And that's really what creates a massive entanglement. If you've let down 100 families that worked for you for the last 20 years, that's a huge weight there. So I think providing that on both sides of the equation really would be the most significant thing you could hand off through a transition.
These results were stunning in terms of the reasons owners want to pass it down appropriately. Number one, and these were all in the 80 percentile range, ensure your company remains viable in the long run was number one. 87% of owners said this. Number two, take care of employees. You've already addressed that. That was also 87% in this particular survey. Number three, ensure customers are taken care of. Did you steal these notes?
I actually did not see
that. You did not look at this.
Nope.
Number four, financial security for yourself and your families was an 83%. And then lastly, number five, ensure company retains the values that you set forth over those years. 78%. Widely important. Incredible, huh?
The takeaway I'm getting from all of this is that you've spent your lifetime building a culture in a company. If you desire to pass that on, you've got to create this transition period. Can people get in touch with you to talk about this for their own business? And who would be your ideal client?
I guess the main thing that I tell potential clients, and you know, obviously I'm not a financial planner. I don't do, you know, end of life business and trust plans. I mean, I work on the beginning stages. I'm in the awareness phase. So if there's a client out there or you're running a small business or an entrepreneur sized business or an entrepreneur focused mindset, the thing that I would say to you is if you want your legacy in your business to outlive your ideas, I'm the right person to talk to. And what we do is we build a culture that is sustainable, that is clear, that is easy to understand because it's a simple system that I use to impart on your employees and transition your leadership team to a kind of a framework that can outlive your guidance and your assistance on a daily basis. So I don't know if you guys usually have people hand out their email address.
Email, however you prefer, yeah. Yep.
Best way to get in touch with me is casey.pets@gmail.com.
And spell that.
C-A-S-E-Y, pets, P-E-T-Z.
Got it.
Yep.
Cool. Gmail, how do you spell Gmail?
Google it.
Google it.
Yeah, right, there you go.
Thanks so much for listening. You can find us online at proutfinancialdesign.com. That's PROUT financialdesign.com. Also, you'll be able to find us on iTunes,